debate. It's a lost art form, especially in regards to soccer during the internet age. This is why the First 11 exists. The First 11 pits pseudo-soccer journalists against each other in a battle for the ages. Here, the week's arbitrarily named top 11 American soccer issues are laid out. Our panelists pick a side and debate ensues. There are no winners. There are no losers. There are no points awarded. There is just reverently irreverent discourse over primarily ridiculous topics that deserve our discussion, or at least rambling opinions of the otherwise ignored. So prepare to be simultaneously amused and aggrieved. This is the First 11. Welcome to episode 34, maybe, of the First 11. I am Abram Chamberlain, coming with you tonight with Mr. Hisco Alejandro, the superstar podcaster of The Midnight Ride, the overall pod father of the AASP sort of kind of network, the leader of the Pickup Soccer, and am I missing any titles there?
I would say the pseudo-Scotch-Brazilian striker.
The handsomest man in the room.
Yeah, no, hey, it's great to be back on the show. Thanks, man.
Yeah, so Evan and Seth took over last week, so keeping with the New England tradition, we're going to go on with Hank again today, as we are going to do what I always do, and we are going to jump right in. And I'm going to try something really fancy, but it might blow up, but that's the purpose of a live show. Let's see if this works.
Oh, wow.
It did. All right, so, closed. There we go. I got too many windows open. All right, Diego Fagundes. So number one on our First 11 is about our buddy, your buddy, my buddy, Diego Fagundes. So, Diego Fagundes recently got cap-tied for Uruguay, I don't really know how to say it, during the U20 South American Championships. I'm not really sure what they're called. I don't especially care. Either way, Diego Fagundes was a prospect with the New England Revolution. He was a stud in 2013, took sort of a step back this year, but wasn't as terrible as anyone else or everyone else would have you believe. So, number one on our First 11 says, Diego Fagundes getting cap-tied by Uruguay, or Uruguay, says more about the United States' broken immigration system than it does anything about U.S. soccer.
So, yeah, so what the point going on with this particular thing is Diego, well, U.S. soccer is getting a lot of grief for not reaching out to Diego and telling him that that they have him in their plans. And so they're treating this as one that got away. Well, to be honest, they never really had him. Diego played for the U15 United States national team ages ago, and was starting to make regular appearances in that competition structure, whatever it is, the youth national team. And then they found out that he wasn't actually a citizen. So he could train with them, but he couldn't really play with them. And then I think the rules changed. I'm not even sure if he could train with them anymore. The point is, they broke off that relationship at that time, and they said, if you become a citizen, we'll re-engage. Guess what? He's not a citizen. Uruguay comes knocking. Uruguay is a powerhouse on the international soccer scene. It's not as big a powerhouse as, say, Brazil or Italy or even Colombia now, but still, it's a big powerhouse. Why wouldn't Diego Fagundes jump at that chance? I don't begrudge Diego for that, and I don't begrudge U.S. soccer for that. U.S. soccer's hands were tied. They could not give Diego Fagundes a spot until he was a citizen. So it's all about the fact that the immigration system in this country, a kid that has a diploma from a high school that he's attended, you know, for his entire scholastic career, has been in the United States. The kid should have been a United States citizen right from the day he got his high school diploma, in my opinion, but that's immigration law. That's not soccer law, and they're completely different things.
Yeah. And the argument comes, is this comes so closely on the heels of the Gideon's LLM thing, where it seemed like out of nowhere he's suddenly a U.S. citizen, he's suddenly playing, so why couldn't we do this for Diego Fagundes? You can't do that for Diego Fagundes because that's just not how the United States immigration system works. If that was, he'd be in the system. We've got all these issues suddenly with all these dual internationals coming in, these dual internationals playing, and everyone wants to look at Fagundes and say, this is the same thing, there's nothing different about this. But there is that difference in it, and you even notice if you engage with anyone on Twitter, you engage with anyone on MLSsoccer.com, or really any other website that covered this, what it comes down to in their minds, in their opinion, is that Fagundes' parents were probably here illegally. I don't know if that's true. I don't know Diego Fagundes' parents. I don't know if they were on a visa or they weren't. What I do know is they weren't citizens. he wasn't a citizen. So this really isn't anything that U.S. soccer could have done. This is not, as you said, one of these powerhouse soccer nations where they're soccer mad, where they're going to bend the immigration law for this kid. It's not going to happen. It shouldn't happen. It's a problem, but the problem is not U.S. soccer. The problem is absolutely 100% on the shoulders of the U.S. immigration policy.
Totally agree. Move on.
All right. Yeah, let's move on to number two before we get too deep in there and turn this into Fox News. Let's see if we can get that to go again. So, in case you missed it, Pat Ronaldo, or Real Ronaldo, is a partial owner, who knows how much, of the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. Recently, 38-year-old Pat Ronaldo, older than me, which is very rare to say about anyone, decided that he was going to offer his services for the Fort Lauderdale Striker, that he wanted to be a player owner at 38, weighing approximately 322 pounds, out of shape. Number two on our first 11 says, Real Ronaldo, or perhaps it's Real Ronaldo, wants to be a player owner for the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. This proves NASL has a long way to go before it catches up with MLS.
Wow. Well, I don't know if it's NASL that's got a long way to go, but certainly Fort Lauderdale Strikers has a long way to go. This is just a cheap tactic to get butts in the seats, in my opinion. It's a gimmick. It's a publicity stunt. They're trying to get people interested in the team. And if they're really serious about, you know, making a play for MLS at any level, then they've got to start, you know, putting butts in seats and getting people there. But they've got to do it through other means than putting Ronaldo on the field. I mean, this is just not a sustainable thing for Ronaldo, and I don't think that he's got it in the tank. I mean, he's probably got more talent in his big toe than you and I have in our whole bodies. But at the same time, he's way out of shape, and I don't think that he's going to be in a position to really help the team significantly when people are just running circles around him. The upshot is that this is just a gimmick, and I don't see it working for them in the long run.
Well, the thing that's most interesting to me about this is immediately everyone jumps on the fact that he's 38 years old, that he's out of shape, that he's in no way fit and ready to play soccer. Is that really that much different than, say, Raul for the Cosmos? I think Raul is 37, 38 years old. Frank Lampard's coming in for the Galaxy. Where is he coming in? Is he actually coming in? I don't know. He's supposed to come in for the other New York team that doesn't or does not exist. But he's, I think, 36, 37 years old. Granted, he's still playing in the Premier League. But it's not the age that's the issue. I don't think this says as much about NASL. I think you sort of put it correctly, which is it's probably a publicity stunt. It's probably just a gimmick. I hope it's just a gimmick. I can't imagine he'd be able to suit up in NASL. Is it as good as MLS? No, absolutely not. But they want to do the same thing. It's the same reason why they, and I'm going to go back to Raul, they signed Raul for the Cosmos. So why not suit up Ronaldo and throw him out there at the end, give him 5, 6, 7 minutes at the end of the game when they're way up or way down?
Yeah, so what's going to happen is you're going to get a bunch of people that are going to come in for the novelty, and you're going to have some people that will say, hey, wow, you know, Raul's pretty good. He's still got it. And they'll say, hey, look at Ronaldo. He had that really great goal. But you know what? The novelty is going to wear off. And then you're left with big gaping holes on your roster, and you're paying these guys a ton of money. In Ronaldo's case, you're probably not paying him because he owns the team. So I doubt he's getting a contract, and he's only playing there as a draw to get butts in the seats, as I said earlier. But I think with the more concerning factor is that this is indicative of NASL, is that this is how they're going to get butts in seats. They're going to go out and make the big deals with the prominent names and try to get the superstars, retiring superstars from Europe, to come over and play in lower leagues. Do these guys realize that they're not on TV every week? That they're not going to be seen to mass media?
I wonder about that too, is that idea of, do you understand that when you're signing for the Cosmos, yeah, you're signing for the historical name, but you're not necessarily signing for the historical hype that came with the Cosmos?
And where do the Cosmos play even? I mean, this is still like a backyard team. It's like they're looking for their home. They don't have a stadium. It's not a done deal where they're going to play. So I think this is a bad sign for NASL that they're actually regressing towards the old NASL instead of, you know, employing a sustainable business model.
Well, I'll be perfectly honest. I would absolutely 100% pay to go see Fat Ronaldo play soccer.
I don't know.
All right. So moving on to number three, Super Draft, which we'll talk a little bit about later, happened this past week. And one of the strangest trades in the Super Draft had a swap of picks between Colorado and the Columbus Crew, two teams whose names I constantly get messed up anyway, amongst which Columbus sent a draft pick plus allocation money to Colorado for their draft pick, a future draft pick, and part-time United States men's national team left back and first 11 favorite, Chris Klute. Number three on our first 11 says, the front office of the Columbus Crew SC should be arrested for stealing Chris Klute from the Colorado Rapids.
So the deal is they get the draft pick, so they drop from 14th to 19th?
14th to 19th.
In this year's draft. I don't know who they picked at 19, but that doesn't really matter because they got Chris Klute. And that is a gaping hole. I believe one of their defenders for Columbus was a guy by the name of Gehring or somebody like that who got picked up in the reentry draft and is no longer there. So they had a gap in their fullback slot there. I think that this is an outstanding pickup for Columbus. And plus they get a draft pick for next year out of it. Colorado must have something up their sleeve, and who knows what it's going to be, but it's a big, big deal to give up a prospect like Klute and a future draft pick for a bunch of allocation money. It'd be interesting to see who the Colorado Rapids picked up in the draft this year. And, you know, if there is somebody in the works that they're going to use that allocation money to pay down somebody's salary, I have no idea. But it seems a bit one-sided on the surface.
Yeah, and that's, I think, part of the reason of where this comes down to is it's hard to judge this when we've only really seen half of it. I take the Super Draft for what it is. If you get a contributor, great. More likely than not, you're not going to. So suddenly you've thrown away, maybe not, and he may not actually be of international quality, but he's definitely one of the two or three best left backs in MLS. He's definitely one of the three or four best outside backs in MLS. He's probably, now that DeAndre Yedlin's gone, the best attacking fullback in the league. So what is it that Colorado's trying to do? Where are they getting? The article which I read, which of course I've closed now, said it's a substantial amount of allocation money. Well, how much is a substantial amount of allocation money? Are they essentially just buying Chris Klute from the Colorado Rapids? I don't understand what Colorado's thinking. I fully understand, like you said, you and I watched every minute of Columbus's playoff, and we saw their defense get absolutely shredded by the New England Revolution. So defensively, they definitely had to pick up. They also got a player who can go into the attack, fit into that Greg Berhalter system. So what is Colorado doing? What's their plan in the future? This could potentially be a very good play for them, depending on how much money they get back and who they're signing afterwards. If this is the entire plan, is just to trade Chris Klute for money, I don't get it, and someone in Colorado needs to be fired.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the draft right now, the draft results, and Colorado did pick up a good defender in Axel Holmberg, some Swedish name. You have to really kind of hock a loogie to say it right. But then Columbus used their draft pick to pick up Sergio Campbell, who is a highly rated draft pick out of UConn. So this is a team that's both teams spending a lot of time and effort on picking up some defense. Colorado also drafted Joseph Greenspan, a guy who's going to be in the Navy for the next 2 years. So I don't know what they're thinking. They're giving away one of their best draft, best left backs in the country, and Chris Klute. It's they've got to have somebody there. They've got to have some big name coming in, a big outside presence there that's going to be a dynamic attacking player for them. Who knows where he's coming from? My guess is it's probably somebody from either South America or Mexico that's going to be a big name for them.
Well, they've been pretty successful getting people out of South America. It's just you've got a proven player, a proven MLS player, and you're just throwing them away. And
well, why make the deal? Why? I mean, why make the deal? Are they just trying to shed salary cap, you know, or pay down somebody's salary? If you're trading for allocation money, they've got to have somebody there. I don't know who's the big name, Colorado these days.
Let me tell you, I was Googling Colorado transfer rumors, and you know what came up? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. All right, let's move on to number four. Hopefully this is the right one, because let's present this. All right, so you were mentioning all of the players on the Super Draft who are being picked up and drafted. I don't know who any of them are. I didn't know who the number one pick was. I didn't know who the number 10 pick was. I spent the last week on Twitter saying, it's going to be fun pretending to know who some of these players are. I have no idea. I'm just looking at the names and I'm going, oh, well, you say he's a good player based on the combine, but I don't know if he honestly is. I don't know what college he plays for. I've never seen him play, so it's just sort of ridiculous. So, with that, number four on our first 11 says, we're there, folks. The MLS Super Draft is just as irrelevant as the MLB's college draft.
Well, you know, I don't think the MLB college draft is irrelevant either. It's because the MLB draft is more than just college. It's you know, they're looking at high school prospects and whatnot, and they're getting kids when they're really young and getting them into their systems. An interesting paradigm, if you ask me. But what's really interesting here is the what I think is irrelevant is the notion of MLS Super Draft rankings. If you look at some of these kids that, granted, nobody really knows who these people are, but there are a few people that, like Travis Clark, Will Parchman, these guys work for the premier college recruiting website in topdrawersoccer.com, and they had a big board going on for the last couple of weeks. These guys watch hundreds and hundreds of soccer games every year at the college level. They know who these players are. They had said to me that this guy, Joseph Greenspan, was going to be a top 10 pick if he wasn't in the Navy. You know, that naval commitment's a big, big deal, and surprised that he went as high as he did. But the upshot is that you got guys, you know, ranked like fifth in the country. They were getting picked up in number 42nd spot. You got guys that were ranked 76 in the country going number 7 overall. And so you get these huge swings both in the positive and the negative. And I don't know what these people are watching in terms of their scouting and saying one thing, whereas big board soccer is saying something else. It's just an interesting paradigm that these draft picks are all over the place, and it was just a mess. I mean, the Revolution, my favorite team, I think your favorite team, has had one draft pick in the and they traded away for the rights to a homegrown player out of Seattle because they didn't like anybody in this draft. Yeah, I mean, that's how crazy this draft was. As far as draft classes go, I think it was a low-grade draft class, and that's probably evident in the fact that people were getting picked out of order like they did. And Christian Realdon, who this big guy out of Washington, everybody had him ranked the second best prospect in the country, slipped all the way down to 17 or something like that. It was a nightmare. Everybody's freaking out. There was a big, you know, Realdon gate on Twitter. And people don't like when I use gates on Twitter, but it was, you know what I mean. It was bad news all around, and I think it was just indicative of how poor the draft class was.
But I don't think it's just the draft class. I think it's the idea of the draft in general. It's so hard to take these players and figure out who's who, who's good, who isn't. You generally do well with the first pick, but even nowadays that first pick could end up being nothing, could end up being less than a contributor, may not pan out for another 4 or 5 years. Now, the Revolution got very lucky with Andrew Farrell.
Remember him?
Yeah. I remember Omar Salgado because I was giddy with excitement when they picked him at number 1. I thought that was going to be a great pick. Now he's somewhere in Mexico. I don't even know what team after being shipped around.
I'm thinking of right now Chandler Hoffman. I was very high on Chandler Hoffman coming out of college. Chandler Hoffman played 7 games for the Philadelphia Union. Then he went on loan to Harrisburg, where he played 2 games. He got sold, trade, bought by the LA Galaxy, played 8 games there, did really well with LA Galaxy 2, you know, 14 goals and 19 appearances. But then now he's with the Houston Dynamo. Now, could he pan out? Yeah, but we're not dealing with the situation where most of these players are going to come in and be instant difference makers. They're not going to take a bad team and make them good for another 4 or 5 years. And the players who tend to do that now are your Giassi Zardeses and your Andy Nahars and your Diego Fagundeses and players who were raised in MLS academies who don't even go through the super draft. So I think we're at that point where the super draft is, well, first off, it's definitely not super. So let's just stop calling it the super draft. If we can do that, that'd be terrific. But you've got all these people putting all this weight in this combine. And I wish I remember who said this on Twitter. But there was someone who posted out the idea of the reason why MLS scouts put so much stock into the combine is because this is the first time most of them have actually seen these players play live. And with the way college soccer runs, with the lack of really interest in those players at this point, I don't think there's much to do with your college draft, with your MLS college draft, not super draft, because no one cares. No one cares about college soccer, and that's not the best way to build your team.
Well, that's a whole other argument. We could talk about the problems with college soccer, and I think that, you know, there should be changes made to the game in college so that it's more a longer season. I think a longer season would be beneficial. I think the fact that if they mimic the game the way the game should be played, you know, less substitutions, no timeouts, have the clock count up instead of count down, and make those small changes, which would make the transition from college soccer to professional soccer a little bit easier. But I think college soccer is still an important resource that has to be tapped, because a lot of kids in this country are, you know, without having the development academies as integral part of the, soccer experience in this country as yet. I mean, it could be there in another 50 years or 60 years, but right now it's still, you know, people don't know what they're going to end up being a professional soccer player. They're going to go to college, they're going to get that degree. I think it's something that we could talk about, you know, on a whole other first 11 about the problems with the college system. But I think the super draft is still probably, you know, as homegrown players go, and until we start seeing more and more homegrown players get signed at an earlier age, then the super draft will be here to stay.
Yeah. Well, as long as it's here, yeah, and looked at as some way to fill out your roster as compared to some way to completely rebuild your team. All right, let's move on to our number 5, Jermaine Defoe. Last week, Evan and Seth talked a lot about our buddy Jozy Altidore. We're going to talk a little bit about my buddy Jermaine Defoe, because I love me some Jermaine Defoe. Jermaine Defoe, upon arriving in Sunderland back in the Premier League, where, you know, he'll undoubtedly score 15 goals and make Jozy Altidore into an even bigger joke than he is coming back to MLS, mentioned to the media that he was tired of being in Toronto, where he was constantly being hounded by upwards of 50 media members.
Wow.
Because that was just absolutely ridiculous and disrespectful, and they were getting in his face asking him questions about, you know, who knows, who cares. Oh, and I've got a child in here, so let me...
Yeah. Little man.
Either way, and this is what happens when you do things live. Hold on for 1 second. Well, so, I mute myself. Go ahead, sir.
All right, well, I'm thinking Jermaine Defoe is a giant waste of space. In my opinion, he's got, he left England under the auspices of, you know, feeling pressured and feeling like some even racial allegations, and there were some problems with one of his, I think his brother or his stepbrother or something like that, or his cousin. Somebody was getting grief, and his mother wasn't happy, etc. So they made this big push to get him to come to Toronto, and they moved his mother over here, and they wooed him, and they did all this other stuff. And they treated him like royalty. So, of course, there's going to be some media attention when he scores two goals in his first game. I mean, imagine imagine how bad it would have been if he hadn't scored at all, or they lost, or whatever. You know, and they he stunk, or he missed a penalty kick, or he chipped it over, whatever. It could have been a whole lot worse. And the fact that he's complaining about it now, when he was just trying to get out, is irrelevant. I mean, this is all just him trying to whitewash the situation, or the media is trying to whitewash the situation. The fact of the matter is that when Ryan Nelson was fired from the head coach, there was a text message sent from Nelson to Defoe saying, "I got fired." Defoe's response said, "Well, if you're gone, I'm gone." It was writing was on the wall all the way back then that he was going to leave Toronto, no questions. The only reason why I think he was here was because of Ryan Nelson, and the ownership clearly, wanted a lot more out of him long term. But without his man there, he wasn't going to stick around. It was clear that in his own mind, he had made a mistake. I think a lot of the England guys probably gave him some ribbing too. Guys from the English national team maybe saying, "Hey, why'd you go over there? We could have used you in England, blah blah blah." But you went over there and you shot yourself in the foot from getting on the national team by going to MLS. And this is all hypothetical and hyperbolic. So I just think it was a bad call. He definitely needs some training in the media, and if they're gonna start airing dirty laundry, like I was homesick or my feelings were hurt, just like, well, let's call it for what it is. It's like, you were mad when Ryan Nelson got fired. Let's put that out on the table too.
Yeah, I don't know which direction to take this in, because I'm looking at him and I understand some of his complaints. The topic, which I ended up getting to read because of my children, is that if you look at how Thierry Henry reacted to the media, he was never great with the media. But as someone, as a media watcher, a watcher of the media, who does not consider myself actually part of the soccer media, it was vastly entertaining watching Thierry Henry just walk out of press conferences. Or just, at the end of, after being eliminated from the playoffs, say, "Congratulations, New England," and then just leave after gathering all the media members around him.
Waiting for them to get ready.
Yeah. I don't think Defoe, maybe he would have if he had lasted, two, three full seasons, he would have gotten around to that. But he's not wrong in saying that TFC is a small club. TFC is a small club, especially compared to every single team in the Premier League, every single team in the Championship, and probably a lot of teams in League 2 or League 3 of England are bigger clubs, quote-unquote bigger clubs, than Toronto FC. But you cannot complain about a club being small while complaining about being hounded by 50 media members. You want to be...
Every media member in Canada.
Yeah. at least every media member in Ontario, the greater Ontario area. But I don't know where to look at it. I understand his qualm because they're very shaded, they're very protected over in Europe from the media, but as you said, if you're coming over here, I guarantee you're not getting racial, discrimination, racial chants shouted at you in MLS. That's just, it's not happening. So calm down about that. Understand where you are, and that part of that big salary you're getting paid is to deal with the 50 media members. Now, he's already back, and there's already articles by The Sun bashing him for not scoring during Sunderland's home game. So I'm just hoping that he doesn't score very much so that they look at Sunderland as being, oh, Sunderland is a terrible team, as compared to Jermaine Defoe being the solution to all problems.
Right. Yeah, and I think, they'll see how bad Sunderland is. It's just one of those situations where, you can try and plug one hole with another, but, if Jozy Altidore is a guy that, scored a good jillion goals while he was in Sweden, the fact that he's not scoring in Sunderland is more to do with the fact that Sunderland has a system that doesn't support Jozy Altidore in the way that allows him to score goals. And if they expect Jermaine Defoe to be able to do that kind of role, good luck to him. Good luck. I expect Jozy Altidore to have a much better performance in Toronto than Jermaine Defoe certainly did. Even though Jermaine Defoe had a great season in Toronto for all accounts.
He had 12 goals, I think.
And he got injured, and he was out for a long period of time. Injured.
Yeah. He was over in England getting, you know, who cares about socialized health care.
I think he went to Brazil.
Yeah, whatever. All right, let's move on to my buddy, your buddy, our buddy, the soccer Don. So during who knows what, Don Garber loves talking to the media. Don Garber started bringing up the idea of St. Louis again, about how St. Louis is back in the conversation. St. Louis, who's getting their first professional soccer team in, you know, a while, playing this year in USL Pro. So number 6 on our first 11 says, Don Garber is talking St. Louis. Slow down, Don. Slow down.
Well, you know, this is a good one because I've always felt St. Louis historically, and everybody knows the St. Louis story. It's you know, the miracle match, whatever. Most of those guys came from St. Louis soccer. They've got huge soccer academy there by, I'm going to get the name wrong. It's like Scott something. St. Louis. Anyway, it's big, but the like guys, some of our favorite Revolution alumni went there. You got Taylor Twelman and Pat Noonan, Steve Ralston, all from the St. Louis area, and it's a big hotbed really for developing young talent. But you know, we're starting to see that kind of whittle away. We're not hearing the big names as much as we used to. But I think in the long term, where there's smoke, there's fire, right? We've been talking St. Louis soccer for a long, long time. And it was, I think, AC St. Louis, which was the team that went that tried to get off the ground a few years ago, and they hired Anelka's brother to be the manager, and they tanked. They tanked, and they did not survive a season. They hired Steve Ralston as a player manager slash guy, and he came back to New England Revolution after 1 year because they couldn't afford to play any. They had to cancel out on their women's soccer team back when WPS was around. They had some good players there that they couldn't afford to pay, and they never even got a game off the ground for the women's team either. So I think this time, though, there's got to be a strong ownership behind them for Don Garber to be coming out at MLS draft and saying, yeah, we're talking about St. Louis. And so there's got to be some serious money behind it. Otherwise, he wouldn't have mentioned that name.
Well, here's my question. The new St. Louis team is a USL Pro team. I want to say they're just called St. Louis FC. I'm almost guaranteedly wrong that they're called that because I don't feel like looking it up. I don't feel like tweeting because I'm afraid my internet will die if I check that out right now. But it seems to me that the idea behind St. Louis as an MLS franchise is going to hinge completely on this, how well the St. Louis USL Pro team does. They're going to look there, and then they're going to see, is this a team we want to promote? Is this a team that we're going to bring up, that we're going to allow to come in? Quite frankly, I think history is stupid when it comes to soccer. Because if history was so great, the Cosmos would be in MLS. If history was so great, Fall River would have a team. If history was so great, the Philadelphia team would have been, see, I've already forgotten, the Steelmakers, the Steelmen, the Markmen, whatever they're
Bethlehem
called.
Bethlehem Steel?
Bethlehem Steel, there you go. So, end of the day, history of soccer doesn't make a difference. And I don't think you just hand a team to St. Louis. I think that this USL Pro team that's coming in is laying the groundwork for a possible promotion or promotion or whatever you want to call it for a St. Louis team. But I still look at teams that are doing well in NASL. If you look at San Antonio, if you look at Minnesota, if you go down to USL Pro and you look over at Sacramento, I think there are better options. I still don't think Vegas should be in the mix. I do think St. Louis is going to be in the mix, and I think it's because Don Garber has a hard-on for St. Louis. I think American soccer fans have a hard-on for St. Louis. I just don't know if St. Louis has a hard-on for St. Louis.
Well, it'd be interesting. I mean, the St. Louis expansion team, you're right, St. Louis FC, USL Pro expansion franchise in 2015. They're also going to be the USL Pro affiliate for the Chicago Fire. So yeah, there is going to be some back and forth there. People will be keeping an eye on them. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of these affiliate teams, actually. I think that LA Galaxy has proven that they that the fully developed, you know, USL franchise for themselves is a good way to go. And that way you kind of get guys that are maybe a little bit closer to home. I mean, like the Revolution have to travel like 6 to 8 hours to get to Rochester, New York. that's just not close enough, in my opinion. Chicago is only a couple hours away from St. Louis, I believe, but still, it's a haul. But the fact that they are an affiliate with an MLS club, you know, that's good news for Chicago, for St. Louis fans. You know, that might actually prove to be the paving ground, you know, to get this team up and running. So
I'm just going to be interested to see what happens, because I can't imagine that the Don Garber coming out to talk about a St. Louis expansion team does not go in hand with this new USL Pro team, and I'm not sure I'm okay with that. I really don't like the direction that USL Pro has been taking, but I have absolutely no power. And speaking of affiliate teams, let's move on to our next one. So, the New York Cosmos have come out, and they said that they're going to start their reserve team, or Cosmos B, in NPSL. Not USL Pro, because that's the USL Pro, which is a, you know, whatever, let's go on and on. So, number 7, I think, on the first 11 says, New York Cosmos B, or 2, or whatever, to NPSL. Yes, please.
Huh. I'd like to see them get their first team off the ground first. I just don't feel. I mean, yeah, they've been around. NASL has made a good run the last few years, but you know, Cosmos are still talking a lot of smack out there. The fact that they're talking about a B team or a lower league team when they're already in the lower league, yeah, you know, maybe, but unless they're really going to make a play for and a third MLS expansion franchise, I mean, it's just kind of showmanship, in my opinion. I think it's more flash than it is substance. I don't know if it's going to be any value to the team whatsoever, to be honest. I think it's more about brand awareness, getting their name out there in certain circles, and then trying to leverage that brand for as much as they can. But, you know, let's be honest. Most of these guys that are signing with New York Cosmos are, you know, older European players and some, you know, guys that couldn't make it in MLS because of CBA agreements and you know, right retention policies and things like that, you know, bona fide contracts that were extended and not accepted. So I think it's going to be an interesting experiment maybe in terms of marketing, but I don't think the team is going to be of any specific value to watch or have any kind of enjoyment value from at a soccer quality level. Just I think it's going to be a regular shit show, as it always is in the NPSL. But
all right, let me just say this: how can you not be excited about this? This seems
I just don't think it's good. I think that the level of soccer is just NPSL is going to be all right, fine, whatever, but. See, I think it's going to be anything of quality. It's just they're fooling themselves.
You know, I never speak in hyperbole, ever. I don't believe in hyperbole. It's ridiculous. But I have to say that this is quite possibly the greatest thing ever. Ever. I'm going to start with the sarcastic angle, and I'm going to move to the real angle. See, obviously, Red Bull New York, who just won the NPSL National Championship, realized that the Cosmos were coming. And they decided that they needed to hightail it over to USLPDL because they're fearful of what the Cosmos are going to bring to this situation, because the Cosmos, that's a legit team. They've got, as you said earlier, history. And everyone gives a shit about history, every single person. So, but to be perfectly honest, I always like the idea of having these PDL and PSL teams a lot more than the farm teams of USL Pro. This place to let your academy players play, this place to let your academy players run. I think I prefer NPSL to PDL because it's more of a fan experience. You, outside of the Des Moines Menace, the, you know, real lower leagues, you know, lower than NPSL or NASL, lower than USL Pro, the real, real lower leagues, the real dirty, gritty Sunday league pub style football takes place in NPSL. That's where everyone shows up. That's where, if not, as you said, good football to watch, it's great fans to watch. And so what I'm hoping for, and I doubt it will happen, is that the Borough Boys and, you know, I can't think of the other one, Long Island Expressway, Crosstown, something or other, I'm hoping that they show up for these NPSL games. The problem is, and I think you didn't really allude to this, but I'm going to allude to it now, is you go to a city like Chattanooga, or to a Detroit, or a Tulsa, or a Des Moines, or a Panama City, places where they've got decent fan culture, New Orleans, there's not another team to watch. In New York, they're going to have to compete with the Red Bulls. They're going to have to compete with New York City FC. They're going to have to compete with the Cosmos. I'm sure there are some other low, you know, the Brooklyn Italians. I don't know if anyone actually goes and watches them, but that's the same league that the Cosmos are going to be in. I'm not sure that this will work out, but oh my God, I'm so excited that it's going to happen because it could simultaneously be the greatest and the worst thing ever, and either way, it is so Cosmos. It is so very, very Cosmos.
So where are they going to play?
I don't know.
Is it going to be part of New York? Are they going to be like New Jersey Cosmos?
They're going to play at Raoul.
They could play in somebody's backyard?
They might as well.
Yeah, I mean, I know NPSL is a little bit more developed than I give it credit for. But the thing is that, you know, if these guys are going to be trying to compete right there with those guys, they've got to go upstate, or they got to go into Connecticut or something, just get it, because they're not going to be able to, you know, make any kind of headway. Maybe that's the plan, though, is just to kind of play there and leverage off the name. It's like, oh, yeah, the Cosmos are playing down the street. Oh, hey, we'll go see the Cosmos.
This isn't even
the new Cosmos. This is the new Cosmos reserve squad. And it's a marketing ploy. I don't know. It's another gimmick, man. They might as well sign Fat Ronaldo to the Cosmos B team.
Excuse me, Fat Ronaldo already plays for the Saints.
Oh, he plays for the Strikers.
He plays for the Strikers. But is it a gimmick? Yeah, but I think it's a good gimmick. And you brought up a point which I didn't even think about is, you know, I'm hanging out down the street from a high school, and I'm like, oh, holy shit, the Cosmos are playing there. Maybe I can go see Raul. You show up, you pay your $8 or $7 or $5, whatever they decide to charge for their NPSL games, and you get in, you know, maybe you do see Raul walking around. Maybe you see Danny Zatella. Maybe, just maybe, you see Freddie Adu. Who knows? He's, you know, still young enough to play in NPSL. I love this idea. I love it on so many levels, and the biggest level that I love this on is I've already decided years ago that NPSL and NASL are going to combine, just like USL and MLS have combined, and it's going to be amazing. It's going to be absolutely amazing.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Oh, my God. All right. Where are we at? Number eight. So, number eight. This is a favorite topic of Evan, so it's kind of sad that he couldn't be here today. You've got this sort of sudden, shall we say, slow growth in NASL.
Sudden slow growth.
Sudden slow growth. There became a while where they expanded. They do sort of what MLS did, which is a new team every year or so. Now, years ago, the Virginia Cavalry was named, and they were going to build a new team. And then the Oklahoma City FC was going to build a new team. And then, thus far, neither of those things have happened. Now, recently there have been talk about an LA team, and that's going to come, and that's going to change everything, and everyone's going to be in fourth time zone. But so far, not a whole lot. You've been hearing less about LA and more about possibly Atlanta folding, which that sort of disappeared recently too. Either way, number eight on our first 11 set, NASL's sudden lack of expansion has more to do with Virginia and OKC than actual slow growth, quote end quote.
That's a hard one for me to wrap my head around because it's like, well, which is it? Is it just the fact that the expansion isn't happening because they're spending so much time trying to get these two teams off the ground, or is the fact that they can't get these two teams off the ground indicative of the reason that there's really no market for this league, NASL? I feel like they're trying to force it down people's throats at this stage. Again, you get back to the signings of Ronaldo with the Strikers and with Raul and the Cosmos, and you get these really big names. It's like, well, you know, Virginia Cavalry comes down the road and they said they've got, you know, Robbie Earl is coming to play for them, or Steve Nichols coming out of retirement to play for Oklahoma City. I don't know. Just rather large names. These teams, the fact that these teams are trying to get these teams off the ground and yet unsuccessful in doing so, is more indicative of the fact that there's really no market in those areas, or the market's already being taken up by other teams.
I mean, yeah. To me, this sort of sings of the girlfriend is trying to show you she's okay. You know, NASL and USL Pro had their big fight and they split up, and USL Pro is doing okay because they moved on, they've shacked up with MLS, but NASL is like, hey, I'm okay too. I'm gonna get me a Virginian in Oklahoma City. But it's just not happening, and I'm fascinated by the lack of anything out of Virginia. I know there's constantly they're getting sued and there's arguments over the baseball ground, and is it happening or is that not happening? And then Oklahoma City, there's that idea of, you know, can they compete with the Energy, since one of the Oklahoma NASL owners jumped ship to join jumped ship to join Oklahoma City Energy, and suddenly they have no interest and they gave up their stadium. But don't you worry, Oklahoma City FC, they've got an NPSL team to go for now. They do have a kick-ass logo, though. But the idea is that I don't think either of these teams are the sole reason. I sort of hit this very well, the idea of, can they survive? Is there a market for them? I think if they hit the right areas, there is a market. Indiana, they're talking to people in Detroit about bringing Detroit City up to NASL. That would probably do well because there's not really another market nearby. Virginia, you got to compete with DC United. You've got to compete with a plethora of other lower division teams. You got to compete with the Kickers. You got to compete with
Carolina.
Yeah, so I think they're trying to say they're okay. Like, hey, don't look at Oklahoma City. Don't look at Virginia. We're going to expand to LA. But can you really expand if no one really cares about you?
Right.
I think NASL has a good following. I think the teams that exist are great, but I'm wondering if they're starting to stretch themselves too thin, and there's only, 13, 14 teams in the league right now. But I should add this. The reason why I wanted to do this topic is if you go to NASL.com and you look at the top of their website, they're still there. The Oklahoma City and the Virginia Cavalry logos are still there, even though it's becoming relatively clear that neither of them are ever going to happen. Ever.
I'm agreeing with you on this topic because it's just not... I think in the long term, that these teams may be better off in the ASL than the NASL. And just... seriously, when you think about the market size that they're trying to even capture here, I mean, it's already saturated markets. You look at Oklahoma, and Tulsa's got some teams up and running now. Oklahoma City, and like you said, has got the things in USL Pro. Midwest is huge in soccer, by the way. They have lots and lots of people out there play soccer as their winter sport. And when the football season's over, and when the spring season comes up, a lot of those guys switch from football to soccer. So all the way from Texas up through the Midwest. And then you got baseball people, too, in Iowa.
Who cares about baseball?
Des Moines had a team. That's pretty sad. But Des Moines Menace?
Yeah, and let me tell you, they draw really well.
That sounds cool.
They draw 3,000 to 4,000 people a game, and they've got a...
Des Moines is the Menace. I'm trying to make a Dennis the Menace joke there. It's not working.
Good luck with that. All right. Moving on. So, where are we? Oh, there we are. Our buddy, Giovinco. So, Juventus midfielder, I want to say star. I think that might be a little heavy, but young guy, 26, 27 years old. I apologize. I don't know enough about him. But on the radar for Arsenal, on the radar for Chelsea, both of them are going after him, but it appears, that he is going to sign with Toronto Football Club, Evan Ream's favorite MLS team. So the idea is now sort of being floated out there that this is a player entering his prime who could be using to come to MLS. Based on that, number 9 on our first 11 says, Giovinco, bigger than Beckham, but for bigger reasons.
I'm still kind of unclear as to what those reasons are. And this kid's a young Italian soccer player.
Youngish, 26.
Yeah, so is he an underwear model? Is he married to a Spice Girl? I don't understand how he's bigger than Beckham. That's what I want to know. I mean, this kid is what maybe he might be all that on the soccer field. And it might be a really great acquisition, but is he bigger than Beckham? I mean, is that the question? Or is the fact that I don't know. I think he's turning down the opportunity to play at Chelsea and the opportunity to play at, what did you say, Arsenal?
Arsenal.
So how much money were those teams going to be willing to put? How much money is Toronto FC going to lay out for him? And Toronto FC apparently has all the money was left over by King Croesus. Because they've got – that's a classical reference there for you people out there. Look it up. Croesus, Croesus. But the point being is that Toronto FC is not afraid to spend money on big names or big talent. It's just they are afraid to spend money on good coaching or consistent coaching, shall we say. It'll be interesting to see what Toronto FC does with this guy, but I don't know if he's bigger. I mean, obviously he's not bigger than Beckham. Nobody's bigger than Beckham. But what if he brings that same kind of quality to the team, then great. But until he starts, you know, showing off a new tattoo every other week in some underwear model kind of gig, then I don't think we could compare him to David Beckham.
All right. Here's why I'm going to actually disagree with you on this one. I think he's bigger than Beckham for bigger reasons. So let me put it this way. Beckham, obviously, and this is going to sound counterproductive to what I just said, Beckham is still and probably always will be the biggest player in MLS just because he is probably the biggest name that MLS will ever get, bigger than Henri, bigger than Lundberg, bigger than Blanco, not bigger than Fat Ronaldo because he's bigger than Fat Ronaldo. But he is the biggest name. I think Giovinco has that potential to be a player in his prime who chose MLS over world powers Chelsea and potential world power Arsenal. And I say potential because Arsenal's no longer a world power. So I guarantee that Toronto paid more money. I've seen numbers in the realm of $7 million, I think it was dollars, not euros or francs or whatever else is out there, but $7 million for Giovinco. When you get a player who is at least partially active on the Italian national team, a player who can allow Michael Bradley to slide back into a more natural position as either a box-to-box or a more stay-at-home defensive midfielder, that's going to improve a team. This is a team paying money for a high-level player in his prime in order to make their team better, not just sell tickets, not just sell jerseys, but get a people have heard of, people may recognize, especially in a city as Italian or as big, or excuse me, as much Italian culture as Toronto, bring him in, someone who played in the Euros, someone who I don't believe made the World Cup roster. I think he was definitely involved in qualifying for Italy. It's a huge signing, and I do think that if it's not bigger than Beckham, it's definitely on the level or just a step below, but I do think the reasoning behind it are better, bigger reasons than the signing of David Beckham, who was more so for the name than what he brought to the field.
Hey Abram, you know who else did? You know who else came to turn down Europe and came to MLS? You know who else did that?
Who did that?
Landon Donovan. So is he bigger than Beckham?
Landon Donovan flamed out.
Landon Donovan in his prime turned down Europe, turned down big money, turn down the plate to come back and play in the MLS. So
yeah,
he's bigger than Beckham too.
Landon Donovan, let's not even get into that because Landon Donovan burnt out in Europe. It wasn't that he had the option. It was if he had turned down a Bayern Munich or
something. Oh, but this is after Everton, man. You got to go back to the Everton loan spin when he just re-upped his contract with MLS. He could have gone to Everton.
He was out of his prime at that point.
He could have passed his prime. Okay.
He is out of his prime. He's out of his prime.
Yeah.
I don't even know. We don't talk about Landon Donovan in the show. He's not even good at soccer.
No,
he's not. All right. So, moving on. So, heat maps.
I'm sorry. They're just so funny.
They've kind of been, you get after Brazil, Germany, there was the heat map of the giant penis going into the goal. You had one of Lionel Messi after his hat today, or I guess maybe it was yesterday by the time anyone hears this, going around that said God on it. You've got one of Juan Mata when he returned where it's just a big heat map over by the bench. Either way, number 10 on our first 11 says, heat map jokes are no longer funny.
Were they funny to begin with? That's the question.
No,
no, they weren't. They're just, I don't think they were ever funny. It's just, they were just stupid and random and, you know, I don't even pay attention to real heat maps, much less fake heat maps. It's just, it's more statistics and more kind of making fun of statistics, I think, is sometimes a good thing because I think people get too hung up on statistics. But, yeah, you know, heat maps as jokes is just a poor vehicle for comedy in any sense. I mean, if you want to be funny, start a podcast.
I know, right?
Right. It's the way to do it.
People just don't understand.
People laugh at us all the time, and we're not even trying.
Yeah, I know. I think the problem is that they're laughing at us, not with us. But you know, whatever.
I got a smile on people's face.
Yeah, never mind. I'll keep that one to myself.
Yeah. Heat maps, not funny. I'm ambivalent on heat maps to begin with, so heat map jokes not worth my time.
I have some tweets, I don't know, some ridiculous number. Maybe it's 700,000 tweets. I don't retweet heat maps. It's not going to happen. They're not funny. All right, let's move on to our last one because I don't even want to talk about heat maps. All right.
It's just not funny.
So, no, not even a little bit. All right, so Juan Agudelo.
Not funny.
Out of contract.
Not funny.
Out of team.
Not funny.
Out of place.
Just not funny.
Out of time. So, number 11 on our first 11 says... Juan Agudelo.
It's been over 250 games since he 250 days since he's played a competitive match. That's almost three quarters of the year. It's insane. And to think that this kid is just out there biding his time. Now I know he's got some personal stuff going on in his life because if you followed him on Instagram, you could probably have figured out who his girlfriend is, and you know if you've check out his girlfriend's Instagram feed that she's very, very pregnant and she's about to give birth somewhere, I think, in either Houston or England. So we'll see. Maybe Juan Agudelo wants to raise his family in England so that he can get international status or resident status in England as his child was born there, etc. But he's not even married to the woman yet, as far as I know. So... it's kind of irrelevant where his son is born or daughter or whoever this offspring of Agudelo is going to be. But, yeah, it's just a sad state of affairs. And I actually got a tweet, back around New Year's. I tweeted out to Ron Waxman to find out if he knew anything about Juan Agudelo. And Ron Waxman, for those that don't know, is a sports agent. And... he used to represent Juan Agudelo, and when I suggested to him that he might know where Juan Agudelo is, he got offended that I would even suggest that he still represented him. And I said, well, okay, sorry, I didn't mean to offend you, but, you know. So Juan's agents are the Wasserman Group, Wasserman Media, and the Team Wasserman is not really doing a lot for Juan Agudelo right now. He's just hanging out. Waiting for that big payday. I think he's going to start maybe a reality TV show before he plays for another soccer team, which might be fun. They could call it Swagadelic or something like that. I don't know, but it's just hard riddle to figure out what the answer to Juan Agudelo would ever be.
The most disappointing thing about what he did for the New England Revolution. Forget about the fact that he wasn't terrible for Utrecht. Be grateful that he didn't end up in Stoke because that would have absolutely murdered his career, is that he is not Freddie Adu. Every step of his career, I would say, except for maybe his youth national team appearances, has been vastly superior to Freddie Adu. You look at his year, three, 4 months in New England, they were absolutely stellar. It's this what could have been. He was playing the best soccer of his career when he played for New England, and now we've just been, forget about him, I've been deprived of watching him improve for a couple of years.
Yep.
I don't know what's going on in his personal life. I don't follow him on Instagram because I don't Instagram. I know he hasn't tweeted in forever. I have no idea who his girlfriend is.
He's shut down on social media altogether.
He's fallen to the wayside. He's fallen off the face of the earth. And the last I heard about him was he was training with Orlando City. Maybe he ends up in Orlando City. I don't know. That's not true. I do particularly care. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking about him now. It's where does he go? He needs to figure something out because he is making such a stupid decision as a 19, 20-year-old that could eventually affect his career, his job in the future. And right now, you know, looking back at this now as a 35-year-old, never was professional soccer player, obviously, I wonder what's going through his head. And maybe, as you said, maybe it is something to do with a girlfriend. Maybe it's wanting to be in Europe. Maybe it's being too pig-headed to say, all right, well, you know what? I'm going to do what Breck Shea does, or I'm going to do what Jozy Altidore or Clint Dempsey or Michael Bradley or anyone does, because the guy could easily command 350, 400, maybe even money in MLS right now. He needs to do something because he's destroying his own career and, quite frankly, hurting my feelings. And that's what's most important, my feelings.
Here's the big thing, right? He took a big paycheck to go to Stoke, right? And he knew that he was taking this paycheck and going over there. They sent him out on loan. And, yeah, I'm almost wondering if it was because if there was something in the contract that said, you know, if you play for another team, we're going to get part of this money back. If you pick up with another team, you're going to be obligated to give some of this money back if it's within a certain time frame. So I'm wondering if he's sitting out for that time so that he doesn't have to give back this cash. It's the only thing. I mean, he jumped at the cash the first place, which is kind of a dumb young rookie mistake. But, you know, he also got enticed by the fact of playing in England, which never happened. And that whole thing kind of fell apart, obviously. And now he's sitting out there not doing anything. I have to think that there's some kind of contractual obligation to pay back some of the money if he gets signed by somebody else, that there's maybe some kickback that he has to give to Stoke as a parting fee or something. But
yeah,
I'm not sure.
I've never thought of it that way, and that makes sense because I can't imagine that someone in the Netherlands wouldn't have given him a shot.
Right.
Or just anything. He did well enough at Utrecht where I would think that someone in the area.
But Utrecht didn't offer to pick up his contract either, so there was something there from Stoke or something saying, hey, we want this much money for him because this is what we're paying him. And, you know, he's still getting that paycheck. That's fine. But that's got to start to wear on you after a while, I think. Even if, you know, Trent, I'm a lot older than you are, and I'm even that much older than Juan Agudelo. But, you know, to give the opportunity to play soccer at a high level, at a professional level, you know, that's a gift, and you're squandering that gift, and that's a shame. That's just it's a crying shame that he's just not playing soccer right now. You know, if he had stayed with New England for one more year and picked up another, you know, I bet the New England Revolution win MLS Cup. But aside from that, Juan Agudelo's career, he'd be in a much better bargaining position with MLS than he is right now. Because right now he's just sitting on his ass. But if he had played for a year and won MLS Cup or even finished, you know, runner-up in MLS Cup, still, he's like, okay, you know, I've scored X amount of goals with that New England Revolution over the past year and a half. I deserve a DP contract. And he'd be in a much better position to even make that demand now than he was when he left New England in the first place.
See, I have this feeling that after the CBA comes out, and I'm pretty sure that the CBA is going to cancel out bona fide offers, he's going to come back to MLS. I just think he did.
Well, bona fide offers are different from players' rights. That's different from rights of retention. So I know that's what, and I think that's what you think you mean here. Revolution made him an offer, which was a, you know, as he was out of contract, and they made him an offer to extend that contract. Is that what you're calling the bona fide?
Yeah, I call it okay.
So
bona fide.
They did that to reserve his rights. Right. Yeah, so it's the same thing. It's the same thing. You're right.
I think he'll be back in MLS before too long.
Yeah, but you know what? If I was New England right now, if I was New England, I'd be on the phone with Orlando.
Oh, shopping that contract.
And saying, hey, you know, what would you give us for
the rights to
Juan? The rights to Juan Agudelo. Because it's clear that he had a relationship with them. He might be more inclined to go play for Orlando than New England.
I'd be more inclined to go play for Orlando than New England, and I'm a New England fan. All right. On that note, you got anything to plug, Hank?
Oh, just the usual. You got the Midnight Ride podcast. We had some fun talking about the draft last week with Travis Clark. And from Top Drawer Soccer, we've had a good interview with Brian Bolello in the past couple of weeks, so I should definitely recommend you check that out if you're interested in hearing what he has to say about the future of the club and where they think they're at. Also, Pick Up Soccer live, probably tomorrow. Probably tomorrow, not tonight. There's some hand egg game that I got to watch.
All right. Yeah, I got nothing. So let's just, from that, go ahead and let's see. How do I usually do this? Go ahead and follow the show. We're at First 11 Pod. Go ahead and follow our network. We're at BAASP. Go ahead and follow Hank. He's at Fiscal 5. Go ahead and follow me if you don't already. I'm at Mind of Abram. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/All American Soccer Podcast, or facebook.com/ I think First 11 Pod, but I really don't know. I should look it up. I don't ever update that page anymore. Go ahead and rate us on Stitcher, rate us and review us on iTunes. This has been episode 30, I think, 4 of the First 11 podcast, and we're sorry.